Okay, we're beginning here on the two dots at the top of Samach Bet Amud Aleph, Shtei Alechem Lashnei Kibtzei Atzeret. Here we're speaking about the Hanafa that is associated with these items. Tan Rabbanan, Venif HaKoen Otam, Al Lechem HaBikurim. It says here that you do the Otam, referring to the Shnei Kibtzei Atzeret, Al Lechem HaBikurim. That's the way that you do the Hanafa with these two items. Yochol Yaniach Kvasim Al Gavei Alechem. You would think that from the Pasuk it says, Otam al lechem abikurim, that you'd put the kibtzei atzeret on the lechem in order to do the hanafa. Tamad lomar al shnei kvasim, that you would do it on the two kvasim. E al shnei kvasim, if you do it on top of the shnei kvasim, yachol lechem agabe kvasim. So that would lead you to believe that it should be the two lechem on top of the kvasim. Tamad lomar al lechem abikurim, that it's on the lechem abikurim. Nishtakel akatuv. You're at a stalemate. Equal sides here, meaning that in Parshat Emor, when it mentions the hanafa of the shtei alechem and the kibtzei atzeret, it says, v'nif otam al alechem abikurim tunufa lifnei Hashem, al shnei kvasim, kodesh yiyu l'Hashem l'kohen. So you have the al mentioned twice in the pasuk, one time al alechem, and one time al shnei kvasim. V'en yodea, so therefore I don't know, im lechem al gabei kvasim, v'im kvasim al gabei lechem. Whether the lechem should be on top or the kvasim should be on top. Mematzinu b'kol makom lechem namalo. As we already said at the end of yesterday's daf, we always find that the bread goes on top. Avkan lechem namalo. So to over here, the bread goes on top. Right? Heicha. Where do we find such a thing? Or where's the paradigm by where we find the bread goes on top? Amar papa b'miluim. That was what we saw in yesterday's daf with regards to the miluim. That Rav Papa said, where do we find a situation in which there was lechem along with the fats? And then the chazev is shok, and the Gemara made a statement that if you have fats, chazev is shok, and lechem, that the lechem is always on top. That was based on the pasuk that we found by the miluim, meaning that it's placed all the way on top, the salamatzot, breads that come along with the miluim, that's on top. We saw yesterday Rashi later on at Pei Aleph, the Shittim Mekubetzin, Aleph Ovir notes that it's true by the Todah as well, by the El Nazir. Those all that have lechem, the lechem is the item that goes on top when it comes to the tnufa. So to over here, the lechem should go up top. Why it mentions miluim? Even though by the Todah and El Nazir, it's true as well. And then we learned out the Drashot of Psukim, nevertheless, by the miluim, it's much more explicit where the Pasuk says, Vayikach et achilev et aliyah, that shoge yamin, umisala matzot yishet lifnei Hashem, lakach chalat matza achat, vechalat lechem shemen achat, v'rakik achat, v'yaseim ala chalavim v'al shok hayamin. There, it's pretty clear, as well as the fact that it's the first time that it happened. It's the paradigmatic example of where we have these three items and breads are placed on top. So that'd be the same case over here. The Baal Yetosvot do note over here that there is a little bit of a problem there because that's the way Moshe took them. But then it says, after Moshe took them, Vayitein HaKol Al-Kafei Aron Val-Kafei Banav Vayinef Otam Tnufa Lifnei Hashem, so that he gives them then to Aron. And Banav, if that's the case, then he would have flipped them over and the lechem would have been on the bottom, similar to what we described at the end of yesterday's daf, that as you pass it from one to the next, that which is on top moves to the bottom. So Tosafot does not answer the question, leaves it as a tzarech iyun, as to why in that case it wasn't the same. It might have to do with the fact that it was placed on kapei aron ve kapei banav. It wasn't passed to a single individual, but rather passed to aron ubanav. In that way, maybe you don't flip it over, or it got flipped in both directions because it passed from Aron and then to Banav, and so then it ends up being with the breads on top again. Biyosi ben Mishulam Omer, kvasim namala, that the kvasim go on top. Umanim ikayim al shnei kvasim, lotzi shiv'a. So why does it say al kvasim, which it seems to indicate that the lechem is on top? So here you're telling me the kvasim go on top, and the pasuk has an alternative, which is that the shnei kvasim should be underneath the lechem. So that he says is to preclude the possibility that it would be connected to the shiv'a kvasim. If you remember, when it comes to the lechem abikurim, they are accompanied by shnei kibsei atzeret, which are the shlamim, which we speak about a lot, because they are correlated, associated. They have possibly an ikuv one to the other. But there's also a series of olot that are brought along with the kibsei atzeret that we already dealt with back on Daf Mempei, where Rabbi Akiva discussed the fact that maybe the korbanot that are mentioned here in Emor are the same korbanot in Parshat Pinchas, because here there are sheva kvasim And also over there, there's Sheva Kvasim for the Musafim. And then there's a Par V'ayil. There, the Gemara noted that the Par and Ayil are different. There, it's Shnei Parim, Ayil Echad, Shiva Kvasim. And over here in Emor, it's just the opposite. It's Shnei Elim, Par Echad, and then Shiva Kvasim. The Gemara said that that was different. They weren't the same korbanot. But there are Shiva Kvasim that are associated with the Lechem, which is V'krapta Mal Lechem, Shiva'at Kvasim Timimim B'nei Shana, Par Ben Bakar Echad, Ve'ilim Shnayim. So those are Yuola Lashem. So you would have thought that the lechem is also involved with the shivat hakvasim. So it comes along to tell you, al shnei kvasim says it's associated with the kibtzei atzeret, not associated with the olot, the kvasim, the shiva kvasim that come. Chanina ben Hachinai omer, meniach shtei lechem ben yirkutehem shel kvasim umeniv. So he comes up with a novel solution to the problem, which is to accomplish both issues. Which is that if you place the bread between the rachim, it seems from here that you would place it with the leg of the animal bent. You would place the bread in that bend of inside the knee, basically, of the animal. Because in that way, you've accomplished both. Nimtzei mekayim shnei mikraot halalu. Now you've accomplished both of these tzukim. Lechem al gabei kvasim. The lechem is above the lower leg of the animal. But on the other hand, kvasim al gabei lechem, the upper leg of the animal, is above the lechem. The obvious response to that is, Amar Rabbi, Lifnei Melech Basar Vadam, Eino Sim Kain. Nobody would present bread that way to an earthly king. Lifnei Melech Malchem Lachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sim Kain. That's what you're going to present before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's just not becoming, even though in a technical sense, it accomplishes what you want the psukim from a presentation and aesthetic, and whether it's becoming to present this before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it fails on that front. And therefore, it's considered to be inappropriate to bring the bread in that manner. Ella, so what's the solution to the problem? This is Rabbi's solution. Meniach ze bitzad ze umenif. You put them next to each other, and you do the hanafa. Not one on top of the other, but adjacent to each other. Vaha b'inan au. What's Rabbi going to do with the fact that the pasuk says au? Au sounds like it's got to be on top. Samalei Rav Chista, Rav Amnuna. So we don't know which direction the memra went in. Rabbi Lutame. This is Rabbi Lishitato. Damar al bisamuch. That the meaning of the word al doesn't mean on top of, but it means adjacent to. And he proves it. D'tanyo. We have a breita. Benatata ala mareket livona zaka. When it comes to the lechem apanim, it says that you put the livona al hamareket. Al hamareket sounds like on the stack of breads. You're going to put the bazichei levona. But that's not what we do with them. We put them on the shulchan itself, next to the breads that are there. It's a Rabbi Meir, al bisamuch. Al means not literally on top of the lechem apanim, but means adjacent to the lechem apanim. And the bazichei levona sit in the shulchan between the two stacks of bread, even though the word al is used there. Ata omer al bisamuch, o eno ela al mamash. How do you know that al means adjacent rather than on top of? Because I have evidence of that from the psukim, the sakota al aron et haparochet. So there it says that you will place almost like a canopy or a cover over the aron, the parochet. The parochet is the curtain that sits between the kodesh and the kodesh hakodeshim. It's a veil between those two areas, which is upright. It does not sit on top of the aron in any way, shape, or form. And so therefore it means, al haron is clearly, habi omer, al bisamuch. It's clear there that the al does not literally mean on top of. Al means next to, adjacent to, in the vicinity of. And so over here, when it means v'sakot al haron, means yes, it'll protect the haron, not by sitting on top of it, but being next to it, and dividing between the kodesh and the kodesh of kodeshim. And similarly over here, the al that is mentioned here twice in the pasuk, and obviously that would create the stira that we have, which is if it's the kvasim are on top of the lechem, and the lechem's on top of the kvasim, it's impossible really to accomplish that. On the other hand, if you use the word al to mean besamuch, to be adjacent to, then it makes a lot of sense. Benivo kayon atam al lechem apigurim, the kibtzei atzeret are adjacent to the lechem apigurim, tenufa lifnei Hashem, al shnei kvasim, that will be a tenufa, adjacent to the kibtzei atzeret. I mean, you have them next to each other, and that's how you do the wave offering, which is both presentable and accomplishes both aspects of the pasuk. And obviously, the simpler meaning of the word al, it means on top, And the reason that Rabbi doesn't want to put the Bazich HaLevona on top is because of the weight of the Bazich HaLevona would cause the Lechem HaPanim to collapse or crack, and it would ruin the Lechem HaPanim. So given that that's the case, then it makes more sense to interpret the word al as samuch rather than on top of. So Rabbi agrees that the meaning of the word al is on top of, but in situations where there's reason to believe that it's not on top of, then we would interpret it to mean adjacent to, and that's true by the Lechem HaPanim, where either it's not derech kavod, it's problematic to put the Bazich Levon on top of the Lechem HaPanim. That's true here by the Shtei Lechem Nekivsei Atzeret, where you're trying to do a wave offering with both of them, and saying al b'samuch allows you to accomplish both sukim rather than saying on top of. And similarly by the parochet, where there's evidence just based on the physical placement of the parochet that al means b'samuch and not on top of. Although the truth is that the proof in itself is probably not as strong as we would think, and that might be the Rabbanon's position over here. There it says b'sakota. Sakota means to shield or to protect. So Sakota could be on top of, literally, or Sakota could be something that divides or blocks. So over there, Sakota Laron is that it blocks things from the outside coming in or from the Kodesh going to the Kodesh and Kodeshim. Parochet is upright, so it's Sakota in a horizontal plane, which is that it protects against the Aron in the horizontal plane. You could have read it as Sakota Al means in the vertical plane that it's protecting from above, like Schach and Socheh, to shelter or to cover. But the truth is that the word sakota can be used in both contexts, both above and on the side. And therefore the al over there, it depends on which plane or perspective dimension that you're looking at it. If it was at above, it would be literally on top. If it's from the side, it's also al on top. It's just in the horizontal plane that you're looking at it, that the al is that way. So that might be a way to dismiss this proof of Rabbi. Or the easier way just to answer is that, yes, in this context, when it's absolutely necessary, the word al means samuch, but generally the word al means on top of. Right, so now, the Mishnah told us that when it comes to a tnufa, that the tnufa is done by molich umevi, you push it out, you bring it back, and you male umorid, up and down. Mara wants to know, what's the nature of this tnufa, these wave offerings? I'm Rabbi Chia Ba'aba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Molich umevi lemisha ruchot shelo. You bring it back and forth to the one who, you can say, the winds or the directions of the world belong to. Male umorid lemisha shemayim v'aretz shelo. And then you raise it and lower it to the one who the heavens and earth belong to. So first of all, Rashi over here says, molich umevi. The simple reading of molich umevi would be to bring it forward and to bring it back. Yet, the interpretation here by the Gemara says, the Misha Arba Ruchot Shalom, to the one who the four corners of the earth, the four directions of the world, belong to. From that, Rashi surmises that the movement of Molichu Mevi is not just forward and backwards, but rather, Litzafon, Vidarom, Umizrach, Umarav. He says that it goes to all the four sides, not to back and forth. Now what's also interesting about that is that he goes Tzafon Darom, north-south, and then Mizrach u'Marav. Not the way that we do today, we're going to speak about this in a minute, the Nanuim with the Lulav, where we go around in a clockwise manner. Here, Rashi speaks about Molich u'Mevi. That's what the Gemara says. You bring it forward, you bring it back. He says, if you're going to go in different directions, you move it forward and backwards in the direction you would have thought that you're facing. If you are outside of Eretz Yisrael, it'd be facing the eastern side, so then it'd be east-west, and then you do north-south. But over here, Rashi has you doing north-south first, then Mizrach-Marav, and then east-west. That's interesting in of itself. The Gemara continues here and brings an alternate view as to why we do this, which is B'marova Matnu Hochi. In Eretz Yisrael, this is how they brought it. Amar Rav Chama Mar Ukva Amar Rav Yosef Ar Rabbi Chanina Molich Umevi Kedei Latzor Ruchot Ra'ot. You move it back and forth in order to prevent the dangerous winds. Maleu Murid, Kadei Latzor, Talalim Ra'im. And then you raise it and lower it to block or to stop the bad dew or the deleterious dew that would come about. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin. On this, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin says, Zot Omeret. This teaches you, Shayarei Mitzvah Ma'akvim Et Apuranut. that even something which is a residual of the mitzvah, or in essence is not me'akev the mitzvah, is still protective in nature. It provides a shield against problems or difficulties that would arise. Tahat tnufa, sheirei mitzvahi, as we're going to see later in the Masechta, tnufa is what's called a sheirei mitzvah. Whenever the Gemara uses that term, it means it's a residual, but a residual in the sense that it's not obligatory. It's lechatchila, it should be done. But if it's not done, you accomplish the mitzvah and you accomplish the kapara in a substandard manner. Ve'otzeret ruchot ra'ot v'talim ra'im. And based on the way that Eretz Yisrael formulated it, it has the protective power to stop against these terrible winds and the negative moisture or dew. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, v'chein lulav. The same is true by lulav. Here you have a correlation with the din of lulav, which is that lulav accomplishes or does the same thing as the tnufa. Now you could ask the question as v'chein lulav. V'chein lulav, is that telling us that the way that you wave the lulav is similar to the way you do the tnufa? That could be one v'chein lulav. V'chein lulav can mean the same reason you do that by the tnufa, you also do it by the lulav, meaning that it's coming to protect against these ruchot ra'ot and the talalim ra'im, or according to the formulation from Bavel, to give hoda'ah to Hashem and arba ruchot and the shamayim ba'aretz. It could be one of those two, or both of them, meaning that the lulav is paralleled with the tnufa over here. Ravacha bar Yaakov, mematilei umaitilei, he used to be molichit, and then meviit, umechave ochi. And then he used to point like this, v'amar, gira ve'ene de sitna. He used to point it like a sword, the lulav, and say that this is a arrow in the eye of the satan. V'lav milta, the Gemara does not recommend this. Shum da'ate litgurebe, because that's provocative in nature. We don't make fun of the satan. If you're successful at conquering the satan, you have an ability to defend against the satan. You keep that quiet. You don't make it or poke fun of the satan. Provoke him then to action, because he's only going to try harder. So we don't try to instigate in these manners. The truth is that Rav Acha bar Yaakov was known as a chassid and was very successful at conquering his yetzer hara. So for him, it might have been okay. That's one possibility, that it works for him. It doesn't work for the common folk. That could be what the Gemara is saying. Or the Gemara could even be saying about Rav Acha bar Yaakov, it's just inappropriate, because Al-Tismach ben Falei Vecha, don't celebrate at the fall of your enemy. And that's the idea here too. If you start to celebrate, the enemy will only strengthen itself and only try harder to cause you problems. So if you're successful, you keep it to yourself, and we don't do these types of actions. The Gemara in Sukkah brings the similar story with regards to this. It's also found in the Gemara in Kiddushin with regards to getting married very young, where if Chisda compliments himself on getting married at 16 in order to prevent any problems with the Yetzer Hara, and then he says there, V'yava Nesivna Bar Besar, had I gotten married when I was 14, Hava Amina L'Satan Gira Be'enach, I would have thought that that would have been a little too extreme, because it would be as if I was poking fun of the Satan and putting an arrow in the eye of the Satan by getting married so early in order to totally wipe out any possibility of improper thoughts or improper actions. And so we see that making fun of the Satan or provoking the Satan is not a good thing. And similarly, there's a story in Kedushin and Daf Pei Aleph where Polimo used to say every day, Gira Beine the Satan, that there's an arrow in the eye of the Satan, which again provoked or upset the Satan. And then there's a whole story there about how the Satan tries to entrap him because of that. And there the Satan makes a suggestion that he shouldn't say arrows or spears in the eye of the Satan, but rather, Rachmana Nigaar Bebe Satan, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should put the Satan in his place or keep him at bay so that he doesn't tempt us or he doesn't hurt us. But not that you should be so bold as to say that Gira Beina de Satan, that an individual who gets married before at such a young age that they didn't even have a Yetzer before they got married in order to protect themselves from any problematic behaviors or thoughts, that might also be what's called Itgari de Satan, making fun of the Satan, or a person who does that and says that they've conquered the Satan, again, making fun of the Satan, which would be inappropriate in those situations. Now, I just want to point out a couple of things here. First of all, we saw that Rashi already mentioned the directions in which you do the movements or the tenufa, the wave offering. He also does something interesting over here. He says, "V'chein belulav be'inan molich umevi." Very interesting. You could read this Rashi in one of two ways. He says, "V'chein belulav," that you have to be molich umevi, means to move it forward and back, or move it to the four directions. What's absent in Rashi here is maleh umurid, which isn't mentioned here with regards to the lulav. That could be for one of two reasons. It could be that Rashi believes that you don't have to be male umurid by the lulav, or it could be that he's writing here, bina malik umimi vechule. Could be that it's just etc. He's saying, oh, what you do by the tnufa, you do this plus everything else that you do with the tnufa. So that would include going in the four directions as well as up and down. And you know that there are opinions like the Sefer Itur that actually says that. He says that, v'moshel b'shtayim hu moshel b'dalid, v'molich l'tzafonu darom lo mizrach l'marav dat chitzonihu. To go in all four directions is a minhag ta'ut, u'mashe b'amrav b'achat shetamchilu l'malo l'mata b'dalid ruchot olam, that they should crown a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the four directions and up and down, enu al b'machshav adalev, v'chein molich hu mevi l'mish dalid ruchot olam shalom b'machshavah. And therefore, all you have to do is be molich umevi. You don't have to go in the all four directions. Now, the difference between the two explanations for the reason we do tenufa in this way might have a nafkamina as to when we do it or where it applies. You look in the Balei HaTosafot, Kidei Latzor Ruchot Ra'ot, Shema Lo B'chol Tenufot Usim Kein. Tosafot suggests that maybe this is not appropriate for all wave offerings. Eladavka b'tnufa shel shtei alechem da'atzeret v'chein lulav. It's uniquely associated with the shtei alechem of Shavuot and the lulav. B'shum narmina b'ver kama de Rosh Hashanah, because in the first parak of Rosh Hashanah it says the gzar din nechtam b'pesach ala tvua. So the gzar din of tvua is on Pesach. Ba'atzeret al peirot ilan, and on Shavuot it's for the fruits of the tree. B'chag al amayim, and on Sukkot because of the mayim. So these are pivotal times with regards to rain, as well as the crops that are coming. And so maybe this molich umevi, maleh umorid, to la'atzor ruchot ra'ot, and the talalim ra'im, is appropriate at these times, or in these circumstances, because they revolve around these pivotal moments in the din with regards to mayim, and the din with regards to the tvua and the peirot ilan. And we only have two things here. We have shtei alechem, which is on Shavuot, we have the lulav, which is on Sukkot. You probably have to include the Omer in this, which comes on Pesach, which also requires a tenufa, and that it would have this same requirement. But that means that it's uniquely associated with these time periods and these items. But if it were not for that, meaning that a regular tenufa, you wouldn't have to do all this all around, up and down. Maybe it would be sufficient, just back and forth might have been enough, because that's a tenufa. And so maybe it doesn't have application to other tenufot. And that's the suggestion of the Balei Tosafot over here. If you believe, like the Bavel's formulation of the explanation, then it's Hoda Hashem, that it's giving thanks to Hashem. Arba Ruchot and up and down, or Hashem's here, there, and everywhere. You have to do the Nanuim, or the Tnufa, in order to indicate that and give Hoda Hashem. If that's the case, then it may be applicable all the time. That might be a nafkamina between these two reasons as to how far-reaching is the application of this. Is this a general statement about Tnufa, and it applies everywhere? Or is this just a statement about these particular items because of their centrality to time periods in which we get gzardin about things that are related to rain, that are related to the production of the fields? So now, when it comes to lulav, we do the nanuim of the lulav, and the truth is that we incorporate both reasons into the nanuim of the lulav. You think about this, when we say halal, we shake the lulav in two places in halal. We shake it be Hodul Hashem Kitov Kilulam Chasto, and we also shake it in Ana Hashem Oshiana, which is that we are using it in both aspects. We're doing the Nanuim as Hoda'al Hashem, Hodul Hashem Kitov Kilulam Chasto. We're also doing it Nanuim as beseeching Hashem to protect us, Ana Hashem Oshiana, and that's only furthered by the Hoshanot that are later on, that we take the lulav. We have the lulav during Hallel, which is Hallel b'Hodal Hashem. We have the lulav during the Hoshanot, which is beseeching Hashem. So in essence, with the lulav, we do both things that are mentioned here, both that which is the Mesorah of Bnei Bavel, which is that it was Hodal Hashem, and also the Mesorah of Eretz Yisrael, that it was about the din with regards to the mayim and with regards to the tvuat hashana. And so for that reason, we use the lulav in both manners, and we do the nanuim in both places, both in the place of praise to Hashem, as well as in the place to beseech Hashem to answer our tefillot. And then the Tosafot then brings from the Oruch, which has influence on how we shake the lulav, and he says that, Lekach b'ninua shebelulav, yesh bo halacha v'hova'a, that the lulav has bring it back and forth. Be'oruch perish be'erech na, tzrich na'aneya b'holacha v'hova'a. You have to shake it when you go back and forth. The Oruch adds on, not only is it that you're moving it back and forth, you could have argued that the shaking of the lulav is the movement back and forth. But the Oruch says, while you're moving it back and forth, you need to shake it. So there's another aspect. It's unclear as to whether the shaking of the lulav is the physical movement of the lulav, back and forth, up and down, or is it actually the shaking of the lulav itself? So in order to accomplish both of those, we are molichu mevi, we go back and forth, but while we're going back and forth, we shake the lulav. We actually cause it to shudder a bit, and that's what's been mentioned here by the Oruch, and it's based on a question in the Yerushalmi, as well as in the Gemara in Nida, where it says here that yitzarich lo'olich u'ovi gimel pa'amim. You have to do it three times, and the Gemara asks, when you do it three times, what does that mean? Molich u'mevi, when you put it out and bring it back, is that one time? Or is it bringing it out one and bringing it back is two? And you only have to do three, meaning that you go out, in, out, and that would be three times. Or do you have to go out, in, three times? It's not clear. The Gemara leaves it as a teiku. We came into Leifshit, since there's no answer to that, avinu l'chumra. We do it l'chumra, shalosh pamim, b'kol echad v'echad. We move it in and out three times in each direction. Though the Ran does bring a practice that notes the bala yitur, which says that you only have to do maluch umovi, maleh umorid. He also says that the nanuim that they're speaking about here are separate from the maluch umovi. It's maluch umovi, maleh umorid. And then you have some small shaking back and forth. And about that small shaking back and forth, that's what the Gemara asks in the Yerushalmi as to whether it's counted as one or two. That's because you're making a small movement forward and back to shake the lulav. The question is, when you have to shake it three times, the kaskesoto three times, or the nanea three times, is that back and forth, those small back and forth movements, are those counted as one or are those counted as two? But they're actually two separate series of nanuim. One which is you bring it out and in, up and down. And then there's the nanuim, and the two do not overlap according to the Ran, and he brings that as the minhag of the Ramban. Rosh rejects that view of the itur, that you just do malich ha-mivi, maleh morid, is like sheti be'erev, or basically creating a cross. I don't know if that's a veiled reference to that Christian practice, and that would be untenable to do that with the lulav, or simply he just thinks that's what it indicates without any religious connotation, and he says the minhag olam is to do it in all four directions, and then he says if you do it to all four sides and up and down, then you get all shishak tzavot yeshlo, you get all six directions. It seems to be more appropriate when you are trying to indicate or give hodah l'Hashem, or to protect against the bad things that come from any one of those directions. And this is our practice with regards to the lulav, that when we shake the lulav, one takes the lulav in whichever direction they're going in. The Mishnah Berurah discusses whether you should point the lulav in that direction, keep it upright, especially with regards to going down. It discusses what's appropriate, not appropriate, what the different practices are. But for our purposes here, we're just trying to discuss how to do the nanuim, which is that, for instance, if you're moving the lulav forward, you would move it out, in, out, in, out, in. That's three times. Plus, while you're going out and in each time, we're not sure if the nanuim means the out and in. That's the nanuim, or you need to shake it. So you need to cause it to shiver or shudder while you're moving in and out. Some people do it when they're out. They shake it three times and then bring it in. Others shake it while they're moving it in and out. So you get the three in both the melech umevi, as well as the shaking of the lulav itself while you're in the process of doing such. So the development of the way that we do the lulav is really built around what I would say is two chumrot, and that is one chumra is we don't know whether three times means malich mevi malich, or does it mean malich mevi is one. So that's one chumra that we deal with. The second chumra is we don't know what's the ninua. Is the ninua the movement back and forth? Is the ninua the shaking of the lulav itself? That relates to the Yerushalmi, It might be related to a misquoting of the Yerushalmi itself, but because of that, we end up doing both of them to accomplish all the different shitot in terms of Na'anu'im. But the way that we do the Na'anu'im today, we move around clockwise, and that's because of Kopinot Shatapunah you do to the Yamin. So we move forward, and then we move around clockwise, and then we do up and down. And that is brought down by the Shut Ma'aril, that became a lot nearly lahakif derech Yamin bin Na'anu'o the Mizrach. Darom, Marav, Tzafon, as opposed to what we see Rashi, the practice here. And he notes there were people who had the practice to go in the opposite direction, which is to the left. But he says that's incorrect, and he doesn't understand it, because that's true when you're backing away or in tefillah, where you're nochach Hashem. But in the case of lulav, when you're not nochach Hashem, doesn't make sense to turn to the left, which is the right of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, rather to follow your right and to move around to the right. And therefore, you would do it to the east, then to the south, then to the west, and then to the north. The other practices might be more correlated with what Rashi says over here, which is Malichu Mivi. He said, Tzafon Darom, Mizrach Marav. So he says that you go in the two different directions. He doesn't seem to indicate that you go in a clockwise manner. All right. Tarabanan. Zivchei shal mitzibur te'unim tinufa, la'achar shchita, u'tnufatan kamot shehen divrei rabbi. So the Zivchei shal mitzibur, as we saw in the Mishnah, require two tnufot, two wave offerings. One wave offering prior to their being shechted while they're alive. That's what we just discussed. That's done with the lechem. And then there's a second wave offering that's done after they are shechted. Now, most believe that the lechem is not associated or affiliated with that second tnufa, because the original tnufa, where the lechem and the kibsi atzeret were separate entities, there we put them together and did the tnufa. Once you shecht the kibsi atzeret, they're the matir for the lechem, then the lechem is out of the picture. Like Rashi over here seems to indicate that we're speaking about just the shlamim, nothing to do with the breads. The lechem is not included at all. And the Rabbeinu Gershom over here also says a similar thing. The Rambam is the one who seems to indicate that maybe the lechem are relevant even in this second wave offering. Are there those that want to explain that they're really not out of the picture, but the nature of the lechem changes? And that is that the lechem turns into quote-unquote basar, becomes now part and parcel of the kibsi atzeret. Therefore, it's subsumed under the wave offering with the basar of the kibsi atzeret. And since the lechem is classified as basar at this point in time, then there's no accomplishment of lechem ala kvasim or kvasim ala lechem. So that's noted by the Griz to explain the shita of Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom over here that do not require the lechem as part of the tzufa shchuta of the zivchei shal mitzibur. Right, it says over here, when we do the wave offering for after shchita, Rabbi says you do kamot shein, the same way you did it before shchita. Just like before shchita you did it with the whole animal, now after the shchita you're going to do it with the whole animal. It's no different than a regular shlamim. A regular shlamim, the only part that's done with the wave offering after the shchita is the chazev shok, which are the matnot kuna that come off of the shlamim. That's what you do with the wave offering. Similarly over here, you're going to do the chazev and shok, you're going to simulate whatever a normal shlamim looks like. But my kamiflege, what is their machloket revolve around? So I'm a Rav Chista, the Rav Amnuna, Rav Chista, once again, they had this conversation between them. We don't know in which direction it went. The domina umina, the domina ukubi'atra kamiflege. This is a method of limud, which is when you learn something from another location, do you take the other location plus all the trappings of that location and apply it over here? Or do you take the specific din that you need from that location, but the remainder of the trappings are local to the situation that we're in? So therefore, Rabbanan Zavre Domina Omina, the Rabbanan say, we learn it from there, and we take all the trappings of there, which is, Ma Zivchei Shame Yachid Tunim Tnufa. Where do we know the fact that you have to do Tnufa, but the Zivchei Shame Tzibur after they're shechted? That's from the Shame Yachid, a regular Shlamim. And just like there, it's Lachar Shchita, Af Zivchei Shame Tzibur Tunim Tnufa Lachar Shchita. So that's the source for the fact that the Zivchei Shal Mitzibur have a Hanafar, it's Nufa, after they're shechted, because it's simulating what we do by the Shal Mei Yachid. Umina. And from the Shal Mei Yachid, we're also going to learn, Mahatam B'Chazeh B'Shok, Kavachanami B'Chazeh B'Shok. Just like by the Shal Mei Yachid, you do it with the Chazeh and Shok, so to over here, by the Shal Mei Tzibur, you do the Chazeh and Shok. So that tells you both what you do and how you go about doing it. What you do is you do a wave offering after Shechita. How you go about doing it is the same way you did it by the Shamei Yachid, which is a Chazeh V'Shok. Rabbi Savar Dominav Uki Be'atro, you learn from the other location, but then you bring in local. Just like the Shamei Yechid required Tnufa after they're already shafted, Av Zimchei Shal Mitzibur Tonim Tnufa. So to the Zimchei Shal Mitzibur, the Kibsi Atzer require a Tnufa Lachar Shchita, after they're shafted, Boki Be'atra, and then bring him local. Hotam Hu D'Chazeh V'Shok. By the Shamei Yechid, you do it with the Chazeh V'Shok. But Hoka, Kemo Chein. Over here, you do it like they were, meaning the entire animal. Just like the Tnufa before was done with the entire animal, so to the Tnufa after Shchita will be done with the entire animal. Just like they were when they were alive, when you did the Tnufa then. Rapapa Amar, Rapapa rejects this and says, Tekuli Ama Domina Umina. Everybody agrees we learn everything from the Shalmei Yachid. Vahainu time with the Rabbi. So then what's Rabbi's reasoning? You understand what the Chachamim's reasoning is? We learn everything from Shalmei Yachid. Means both the Tnufa, Achar Shchita, as well as the Chazeh V'Shok. But what about Rabbi, who says you do it with the whole animal? Ki Hatam. Mahatam Dabar Shematana L'Kohen. It has to do with the nature of the gift to the Kohen. By a Shamei Yachid, the only thing the Kohen gets from the Shamei Yachid is the Chazeh V'Shok. By the Zivchei Shamei Tzibur, they're Kodshei Kodashim. The Kohen gets all of the Basar of the Kodshei Kodashim or the Zivchei Shamei Tzibur. The Shamei Yachid, he gets the Chazeh V'Shok, the remainder of the Basar goes to the Balim. But over here, they get the Basar and the Chazeh V'Shok. So basically we parallel and say, you're right. Anything that's a matana the Kohen is subject to Tnufa. So by the case of the Shamei Yachid, that's the Chazeh V'Shok. By Zimchei Shalmi Tzibur, that's the entirety of the animal, because everything is going to the Kohenim. Tosfot does point out that this sheet of Rapapa over here changes later on, because in the Gemara in Zvachim, Rapapa goes back to believing that the Machloket here is about Domina, Umina, or Donimina, Vuki, Ba'atra. So this is a preliminary stage in Rapapa's view, where his mind is changed later to say that really is such a machloke between Rabbi and the Chachamim. This also might shed light on the nature of Tnufa. That is, why do we have wave offerings? When are wave offerings done, or why are wave offerings done? It seems to be here that it's correlated with things that don't end up on the Mizbeach, but do end up with the Kohanim or someone eating them. And so it might be a mechanism for presenting them before God, and then allowing the individuals to eat from the table of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And whereas things that go on the Mizbeach, that are burnt on the Mizbeach, get burnt to a crisp, and that's it, they're Ole Lashem. Things that are going to be eaten by the Kohanim, they're being gifted that from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But how do we indicate that this was granted or given to Hashem, and then given afterwards, gifted to the Kohanim? You have to do some sort of religious ceremony, religious consecration or presentation before Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Tnufa does. And then it's given to the Kohanim. So that might be interesting only because even if we don't believe this is the reason behind Rabbi, it might shed light on what the Tnufa is doing based on the way that Rabbi's expressing it over here. Everybody believes that we learn from the Shamei Yachid and then we bring it to the local issue. So that explains Rabbi's position as to why you do the wave offering with the entire Shlamim. What about the Rabbonon? Final time of the Rabbonon, Shamehem Ribuyahu. Because it says, Shamehem, but the Shamei Yachid, when it speaks about the Tnufa, Chazeh Tnufa V'Shok HaTruma, Akafti Meid B'nei Shom Zivchei Shamehem. Why is it written in Shamehem in plural? So that comes to teach you that this is not only true by the Shamei Yachid, it's also true by the Shamei Tzibur. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and here we're about to quote the last part of the Mishnah. We're going to read the whole last part of the Mishnah again. Three different types of korbanot require three different processes. Each one of them requires two out of the three, and the third one it does not require. These are the items that required it. Zivchei Shamei Yachid, that's a regular shlamim of the Yachid. Zivchei Shamei Tzibur, those are the kibsei atzeret. Vasham Mitzorah, the Hashem that's brought as part of the Tarat HaMitzorah. Zivchei Shalmei Yachid Tunim Smicha Chayim Utnufa Shkutim. They require smicha by the Balim while they are alive. Utnufa and a wave offering after they are shechted. Veimem Tnufa Chayim. The thing that they are missing is a wave offering while they're still alive. Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur Tunim Tnufa Chayim Ushkutim. They require a wave offering both alive. That's what we just spoke about earlier. The Shtei Alechem along with the Kvasim. As well as Shchutim, which is what we just discussed, the Machlok between Rabbi and the Chachamim, about what part of the Zibchei Shalmi Tzibor, the Kibtzi Atzeret, do we do the way of offering after they are shechted? Is it the whole animal or just the Chazev Ishok? They do not have smicha. Again, we're going to discuss this all in momentarily in the Gemara. Asham mitzora ta'un smicha, that also requires smicha, utznufa chai, and a wave offering while it's still alive, that's a wave offering that's done with the Vogue Shemen that is brought along with the Asham mitzora, ve'imbo utznufa shachut, and there's no wave offering after it's already shechted. Vayu, zivchei shame yachid tunim tnufa chayim, mikal v'chomer. Zivchei shame yachid should require a tnufa while they're still alive from a kal v'chomer. Don't require smicha while it's alive. Yet they still require wave offering while it's alive. Shlamim of the yachid that do require a smicha while they're alive. Certainly they should also require a tnufa while they're alive. And even though it would be just simple to say, as Bali just wrote note over here, kochad v'chad teku b'duchtei, each one of them has their halachot that are associated with them. Why are you then trying to bring the halach of one to the other? Tosfot says, because yesh lomar dekom akom abe yalif mevmei matzinu. We have a mevmei matzinu, which is, we have this by this korban, and something similar by another korban. Maybe there should be some correlation or some lima that goes one from the other. Obviously, the kal v'chomer itself has a pircha built into it, which is the third item that each issue has that the other one doesn't have is a chumra, then would prevent you to do the limud. So it's clear that the Gemara, even though it's using the term kal v'chomer, must be saying it's a me matzino, and they're trying to suggest that once we have these concepts involved in a korban, maybe they should have broader application than the korban itself by which they are written. Mi'et rachmana gabe zivchei shal mitzibor. Zivchei shal mitzibor, it says, otam. Otam, limute zivchei shal miyachid. Only they require this tnufa. Nothing else requires this nufa. That's Venifa Kohen, Otam, Alechma Bikurim. Only these require this live type of wave offering. That's not true, but the Shlamim of the Yachid. Now let's take the limud in the other direction. V'yu, Zivchei Shami Tzibur Tunim Smicha, Mikav V'chomer. Then let's say that the Zivchei Shami Tzibur should require Smicha from Mikav V'chomer. Ma, Zivchei Shami Yachid She'in Tunim Tnufa Chayim. They do not require wave offering while they're alive. Tunim Smicha, they do require Smicha. Zivchei shami tzibur shetunim tnufa chayim, that do require a wave offering while they're alive. Enudin shetunim smicha, they certainly should require smicha while they're alive. Amar Avina, gmire, we have a halacha l'moshe misinai a misora, shtei smichot b'tzibur. There are only two instances where there is smicha by the tzibur. Those two instances are Yom HaKippurim, where we have the Sa'ir Mishtaleach, upon which we do smicha, and the Par Helem Dovar Shel Tzibur, where the Beit Din also does smicha on the Par Helem Dovar Shel Tzibur. Now the truth is that there are additional smichot in the Tzibur, but the question is whether maybe there are a subset of these items. The truth is that the Par of Aaron on Yom Kippur does require smicha. So the answer to that question either is that the Par is considered to be a Korban Yachid there, because Aaron purchases it, even though he's doing it on behalf of the Kohanim as well. Truth is, it has trappings of both the Yachid and a Tzibur. So you either can answer it's a Korban Yachid, or you can answer that it's subsumed, meaning that the Smichot of Yom HaKippurim, whatever the Smicha of the Seir Mishtalech does for Bnei Yisrael, according to those opinions, the Smicha on the Par of the Par of the Kohen Gadol covers the Kohanim for whatever is being done for the Yisrael. So that's one way to do it. The other one is the Seir Avodah Zarah. Seir Avodah Zarah is brought for the same thing as Par Helem Dovar Tzibur, just when it's a violation associated with Avodah Zarah. So there it's clearly a Korban HaTzibur, and it requires smicha. What you'll have to answer there is that the same thing as Par Helem Dovar Tzibur. It's just another manifestation of it. It's just a unique aspect of when it comes to Avodah Zarah. But it's the same Korban, basically. It's just a different animal because it's Avodah Zarah and not one of the other mitzvot. So that way, we have only two where we have smicha. And obviously, the Kibtzei Atzeret are not amongst those where the Mitzora has it that you have smicha. Behei Hashem Mitzora Tzon Tznufa Shachut, Mikal V'chomer. The Hashem Mitzora should have the require a tznufa after it's already shechted. Uma Zivchei Hashem Yechid, She'in Tonim Tznufa Chayim, Tonim Tznufa Shchutim. The Shlamim of Yechid do not require a wave offering while they're alive, do require it after they are shechted. The Hashem Mitzora should Tzon Tznufa Chai, that does require a wave offering while it's alive. It certainly should have then a requirement for a wave offering after it is shefted. And even though Tosafot points out early on, we saw the Gemara said that it says tnufa velo tnufot. There's only one wave offering, not multiple wave offerings. Nevertheless, this would be different because over there it's in one circumstance. Well, that's what the lo shemen and the asham mitzorah should be, have their wave offering together. But over here we're speaking about two totally different tnufot, and maybe that would not be precluded from the word tnufa velo tnufot. Miet rachmana gabe zivchei shami yachid. But the Zivchei Shami Yachid, it uses a miut of Beinif Oto, where it says, Yadav Tevienu Et Yishe Hashem Et Achelev El Chazeh Yivienu Et Chazeh Lanif Oto Tnufa Lifnei Hashem. Oto Limutei Hashem Mitzora. Oto comes to teach you that only it and not anything else, meaning that the Shami Yachid will require a Tnufa, the Hashem Mitzora will not require a wave offering. Tanra Banan. Chamisha sheviu korban echad. Five people who brought a korban in partnership. Echad meniyif al yidei kulam. One of them could do the wave offering on behalf of all the others. So this is interesting for a number of reasons. One of which is that we saw earlier that when it came to the hanafa, the wave offering of the korban, we said that the balim do it in partnership with the kohen. So we saw that you have the capacity to do it more than one person. For Rashi, it meant putting the hands of the Kohen under the hands of the Balaim, and that wasn't considered to be a chatzitza. The Baya Tosafot, it was that the Kohen had his hands at the base, and the Balaim had them higher up on whatever they were holding, but they were able to do it together. So over here, we have five partners. Why can't they come and do the tnufa together? So either you have to say that it's a Kohen doing it with the Balaim. The Kohen, who is well-practiced and versed in this, is a Zariz. So he can manage it, so there's no problem in terms of doing the wave offering. You get five people trying together to do a wave offering, it's not going to work. And so that's why we don't do it. The other possibility is that you do have the ability, as we've seen, and it's what seems to be from the remainder of the Braita, to have a shliach do your hanafa for you. We saw that in yesterday's daf, the machloket in the Rishonim, as to whether that applied to women, or that applied to women and Ovdei Kochavim, as to the ability of the Kohen to do the tnufa on behalf of those individuals. So if that's the case, you can have someone represent you in doing the tnufa, the wave offering. So that's why one out of the five can do it, because he's not only doing it for himself, he's doing it on behalf of all the other partners that are there. And then we pick one person to make it feasible to do the wave offering instead of untenable, where here he has five. What happens if you have 10 or 100 partners? There it's not going to work to have them all do it together. So therefore we appoint one individual out of the partners to do it on behalf of the whole partnership. Now, Vaisha, Kohen Minifa Yada. So this was central to the machloket yesterday. This was the braita that they were all quoting, which over here it says that a woman, the Kohen does the hanafa on her behalf. So again, topically, that would make the previous statement connect to this, which is that you have one person doing it on behalf of many. Over here, the Kohen doing it on behalf of the woman. What the Rishonim pointed out yesterday is, where is the Oved Kochavim over here? If you believe that the din of an Oved Kochavim and Isha are the same, how come the braita doesn't say, how come it only mentions that a Isha Kohen Minif Al Yada? From there, the Shita Mikvetzet brought it. Tosafot quoted Rashi as saying this, that the Gemara yesterday was saying that there are three different tiers. There is Ovi Kochavim who doesn't have Tnufa whatsoever. There is a woman who has Tnufa, but it's done a Yadea Kohen. And then the man who does the Tnufa with the Kohen. Those are the three levels. But the Isha and the Ovi Kochavim do not have the same halacha. And they prove it because here the bright only mentions Isha, not Obey the Kochavim. And then the Baya Tosafot, in defense of that position that said that they were equal, says that there are two opinions with regards to Shlamim. Everybody agrees that Ish teaches us that Obey Kochavim can bring Korbanot Olah. There is a machloket as to whether they can bring Korbanei Shlamim, and included in that machloket would be the fact of whether you can bring a Mincha. That if it is only that you can bring an Olah, then you can only bring Menachot that are totally consumed on his back, that would be a minchat nisachim. If you believe they can bring shlamim, then you would also be able to bring a regular mincha as well. So there is a machloket as to whether Oved Kochavim can bring a shlamim. If you believe they can bring a shlamim, that might be what the bright on yesterday's talk was speaking about, that they can bring it, and then the Kohen does the hanafa on their behalf. This bright might be authored by a physician that believes that Oved Kochavim cannot bring a shlamim. If that's the case, there's nothing to speak about. If they can't bring a shlamim, there's obviously no tnufa. And that's why it only mentions Isha. That's the way Baal Yat Tosfot yesterday dealt with this problem. So too, someone who sends his korbanot from overseas the Kohen does it on his behalf. Tosafot raises a question here that appears in a number of places in Shas, which the Gemara itself asks the question, how can someone send a korban from overseas because they're not present? They can't do the smicha. They can't do the smicha on the korban. And that's what the Mishnah says in Gittin. Ashleach hatato min dinat hayam, makrivin ota b'chezkat shehu kayam. Since we're overseas, we are makriv the korban with the assumption that the person is still alive. We don't assume the person passed away, and it's a chatat shenitkapru ba'aleha. Then the Gemara says, v'abai smicha. Doesn't it require smicha on the korban? And the Gemara gives two answers. Amar Rav Yosef ben korban nashim, that it's a woman's korban that does not require smicha. Or Rav Papa answers in Gittin, that's b'chatat ha'of. Spimer ha'chatat ha'of, which doesn't require smicha, and that's why it's okay. Neither of those answers would work over here. Because first of all, with spimer tznufa, it's only relevant by behema, not by an oaf. And you can't say the case here is where they sent the korban and it was a woman, not a man, because here in this braita, the woman is mentioned separately. So then Tosafot is perplexed as to how we have a korban that is being sent from overseas here when there's a requirement of personal smicha, which the individual can't carry out in this instance. Tosafot in the end suggests that smicha itself is not a me'akev, and why the Gemara in Gittin is so focused on it is because there's an additional problem there, and that is, because it's a compounded problem. So there, the compounded problem is that you're worrying about the person passing away, plus the smicha. So together, that's where the Gemara is saying that shouldn't the Balim be there for the smicha? But had it not been for that question of whether the Balim are kayam, for instance, it's not a korban chatat, where that's not an issue, then we also wouldn't worry about the issue of smicha as well. And this once again relates back to the idea that someone else can do the hanafa on your behalf, which is not really true with regards to the smicha. And the difference being that smicha is the integral connection between the bala korban and the korban itself. It's how the person then makes or vicariously creates the korban to be as if they are going on the mizbeach. And that's something that only the Balim themselves can do personally, especially when the smicha involves a vidui as well. There you can only have the Balim do it. Nobody can do it on their behalf. You can't have someone else sacrifice themselves on your behalf. That is the antithesis of what we're looking for in a korban, which is the individual is sacrificing themselves before Hashem, as the Ramban on the Torah describes in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. When it comes to the hanafa, which is, as we explained above, more of a religious presentation before Hashem, over there, you can't have a shliach do it on your behalf because it's an indication of the holiness, the uniqueness of this item, and that it is being dedicated to Hashem, and then from there, given to the Kohanim. That can be done by a shliach on your behalf, and that's why hanafa can't be done by someone else or on behalf of the individual, where smicha cannot be done. All right, we're going to stop here at the end of Samach Bet, Amud Bet.